Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
850-58-BBC.co.uk. This from Ollie saying, I watched Poseidon last week. If you ever want to watch a movie that sums up the very worst of Hollywood, watch Poseidon. Right from the first shot of the film, Wolfgang Petersen is merely showing off his CGI budget.
That's absolutely true. That's right on the money.
And you know that the rest of it is going to stink. And he doesn't disappoint. The script is probably one of the worst ever written. It is cliched, sexist, and the writer clearly never saw Airplane. Petersen hasn't a clue how to direct actors, or indeed anything else, other than his beloved CGI water. The acting is terrible. The only well-delivered line is when Richard Dreyfuss is asked, is it bad? And he replies with conviction, it's very bad. The audience feels his pain. Forget Ice Age 2, Poseidon is the death of narrative cinema.
Can I just to say something on that point? It was my suspicion when I saw Poseidon that actually at some point there was a longer version of it with more talking. And then when they got it into the editing room, they realised the talking was all so bad that they just cut it away. I mean, I can't believe they set out to make a movie with that little character and that little dialogue. I suspect that they started out thinking that they were remakes. Because if you remember the original Poseidon Adventure, it's all to do with character. It's all to do with, you know, Gene Hackman as the turbulent priest. It's, you know, every single character is well drawn. The only character that's well drawn in Poseidon is Richard Dreyfuss, who's the jilted gay architect. And the only reason he's well drawn is because you just remember, oh yes, he's the jilted gay architect. Is he actually standing in for Shelley Winters? I think they got it into the editing room. They realised that the characters, every time they spoke, were terrible. So they cut out as much dialogue as was possible, which literally left, I've been jilted and I'm a gay architect. Here comes the wave. Is it bad? Yes, it is. Oops. I mean, that's it.
Simon in Great Yarmouth can't believe someone has remade the classic Poseidon Adventure with obvious terrible results. What 1970s classic disaster movie will they ruin next? Earthquake? Towering Inferno? Who will play Steve McQueen's fire chief? Jude Law? Oh, well, at least the World Cup is finally here. Hey, Mark.
But it's not the first remake of Poseidon Adventure. There was a television remake of Poseidon which updated it by having the ship be knocked over by a terrorist act rather than a wave. There was a wave as well, but it would have survived the wave had it not been for the terrorists. That was the kind of post-terrorist age spin. It was rubbish, of course. It was absolute rubbish.
Do you think the movie releases are affected by the World Cup? Do they look at this enormous... obviously, you don't know the whole thing's taking on at all, but...
It had actually occurred to me recently that there were a couple of football films on the way, because there was that thing Once in a Lifetime, which I liked very, very much, which was a film about how the Americans don't really understand soccer, but how, on the other hand, thanks to Warner Brothers, they managed to buy Pelé in this enormous... which I really, really enjoyed. And then, of course, this week, there is this movie released, Offside, which is that rarest of things, a light-hearted Iranian gender-based football comedy. And I can say right now, you can put it on the poster, it's going to be the best light-hearted gender-based Iranian football comedy of the year.
In the world ever.
Exactly. And of course it's out today and it's opening the World Cup, but it wasn't until a couple of hours ago that I realised that was the case.
And is it any good?
Shall I tell you about it?
Yeah.
Well,
I suppose you can't play us a clip because it's in Farsi.
It is. And although, funnily enough, there are some, don't look at me whether that's the, you know, there are some clips which you probably could understand, which is crowds of people going, Iran! Iran, and it's
not to that tune.
To that tune, except the words are Iran. You know, that's it. Okay, so anyway, it's ideal for me, basically, for a number of reasons. Firstly, although it is a football movie, there is no football in it at all, other than very briefly in the background. It was filmed around the Iran. Now I'm going to pretend as if I know this, but I only know this because I read it. The Iran Bahrain match, which they played, fought, whatever it is, in 2005, which meant that Iran qualified for the World Cup. So presumably they are now here amongst the teams that are about to go and do for the World Cup. That's correct.
Yep.
I'm looking at you for reassurance. That's right, is it?
Yes, and you said you knew their fixtures, so...
Yeah, I do. Well, I've got some... You want me to tell you how they're doing? Coming up, those Iran matches in full, they play Mexico on the 1st of June in Nuremberg. They play Portugal in Frankfurt on the 17th of June. And they play Angola on Wednesday the 21st in Leipzig, or
yes.
Leipzig. Let's call the whole thing off. So, anyway, I don't know if you get knocked out of one. Will they necessarily play all three matches?
Yeah, you play the... It's like explaining it to a toddler. Okay, what happens is, in the first round... Okay,
imagine how much my kids enjoy asking me about football.
That must be a very disappointing conversation. Mm. In the first round, every team in each group plays each other.
So everyone plays everyone?
In their group.
Right.
Okay. You've just read out the other teams in Iran's group. Then there's a second stage.
Is that what I did?
It now becomes a knockout.
All
okay,
right.
And then if you lose a game, you're then out. Second
okay.
stage, quarterfinal, semi-final, final. Just
okay.
stick to the movie.
Clear as mud. So, the inspiration for it was apparently, and this is even further history, 8 years ago, Iran beat Australia and therefore qualified for the World Cup. I mean, again, who knew? That's apparently right. A bunch of people. I didn't know that.
When managed by Terry Venables.
Really?
Australia at the time.
I thought you meant Iran.
No. So, you know, who knows?
It seemed unlikely.
He may well end up there.
Okay, fine. So, apparently, after that win, the team came back home and women were allowed to celebrate. And this was quite a big deal because they're generally not allowed to join in that sort of thing. And the director, Jeff Arpanahi, who is a very well-known director, although his films are regularly suppressed in his home country, they are quite well-known around the world, went to a football match sometime afterwards, and his daughter tried to come with him, and she was refused entry to the ground because this is apparently the standard practice. You don't allow women into the ground because it's a bunch of men swearing and behaving badly, and this is considered that it would be a bad influence. Although actually there's one lovely bit in Offside at the beginning of it in which some of the men say that's exactly why they like to go to the football match, because they can curse and nobody will interfere with them because, hey, it's a football match. But then his daughter managed to sneak in, and apparently one of the ways that people manage to sneak in is by dressing up as boys, and this is quite a common occurrence. So he decided to make a movie about girls and women attempting to go to see the World Cup match. In this case, Iran versus Bahrain. Now, obviously, on paper, this sounds like a total dead loss to me. I don't know any of the teams, I don't know any of the rules, I don't know any of the cultures, I don't know any of the customs. I'm completely like a fish out of water. It's really terrific. Number of lovely things about it. The first thing is, some people have said that it's they've compared it to Bend It Like Beckham. Well, I actually thought it was much closer in tone to sort of Bill Forsyth movies. It's really genuinely gentle, but in a kind of melancholic and insightful way. We follow a group of girls and women attempting to get into the game. Some of them are dressed as boys. One of them is dressed as a soldier. They're all kind of detained and rounded up near an entrance to the game, so they can't see the game. And the soldiers that are guarding them don't want to be guarding them. But on the other hand, they can't let them go. And one of the soldiers agrees to start commentating on the game from his vantage point, which is peering through the gate. Meanwhile, they're all trying to, you know, get out and get back into the stadium. One of them says that she has to go to the toilet, which leads off this fantastically funny sequence in order to be taken to the male-only toilets, because there aren't any female toilets, because there aren't supposed to be any women at the game. They have to get her to wear a cardboard cutout of a footballer on her face. And then they put holes in the eyes so that she can see, but then they realise that in the toilet there is obviously graffiti, which is effectively men cursing and swearing, so she has to... Anyway, believe me, I know, when I say it like that, it doesn't sound funny. But in the movie, it's really...
It's the way you tell them.
It's really, really charming. It's great if you... For me, if you're a complete outsider to football, because it's... What it's about is it's about the enthusiasm. It's about people really wanting to be part of the game, really wanting to be part of a sort of, you know, a national event.
Is there an umpire band?
No, there's not an umpire band, but there is an umpire band out there in the street.
Let's just listen. No, actually, I think I'd rather listen to your criticism.
They were playing deck the halls with Bows of Holly, weren't they?
Could you ask? An umpire band and a movie review all happening at the same time.
And it transpires that some of the women who are not being allowed into the game actually play football, because they play football in the women's football games which are attended only by women. The reason I like it is, as somebody who genuinely, and I'm not being funny now, somebody who genuinely hasn't had any interest in football, doesn't get football, I've never got it. I've never got the kind of the national enthusiasm for it. I've never got why it is that people get so excited. I'm not saying that they don't. I understand that they do. It's just, it's like me in The Exorcist. There's really no explaining it. Watching Offside, I actually felt that I understood at least a little bit more what that was about. Because what he does brilliantly as a director is to show you that sense of wanting to be part of this kind of collective event, which is, you know, riotously positive, which is, you know, obviously, as it happens, particularly well-behaved, and is a, you know, is a force for good. It is people celebrating. Because, of course, at the end of the match, I'm not going to give away any surprises here, because it's already happened, everyone knows they've qualified, they win. And as a result of them winning, even though these women haven't actually managed to get into the game, there is this sort of great, you know, national cheer goes up. And then, of course, I said, oh, well, you know, I want interesting and see how Iran does. And now, of course, I discover that perhaps not everybody following Iran is...
There has been some press suggesting that neo-Nazis are going to support Iran. This is all very, very bizarre, but because President Ahmadinejad has decided he wants to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, and so therefore some strange people have decided that they're going to support Iran. Anyway...
But all I'm going to say is, so consequently, having briefly had a moment of understanding it all, of course, now I'm back into confusion. But Offside, football movie for people who don't get football.
Matt, on this email, it says, apologies for coming to this a little late, but I finally got round to watching the first Ice Age movie. I was meant to be revising for something, but hey, small friend. frozen animals. I realise it's not exactly the right film, but I tried the whole, I think it reflects the death of narrative cinema thing, six times with nine different people, both verbally, by text and by email. No response. The best I got was, oh, does this mean that narrative cinema is so dead that no one knows what it is anymore and doesn't miss it? Thought the film sucked, by the way.
Germany 2006.
No one gets you closer than Five Live.
With every game live.
Four with a crush. Great tensions. Goal for Peter Crouch.
The BBC big screens around the country.
And Nicky Campbell.
Simon Mayo.
Victoria Derbyshire. Live from Germany.
To bring you all the flavour.
Plus,
we're the only radio station inside the England team hotel.
Germany 2006.
Every game live on Five Live.
Okay, so I was in Los Angeles earlier this week, and I looked up in the sky, and up in the sky, a skywriter had written 6606, this being the 20th Century Fox publicity campaign for The Omen, which was the remake of the 1976 movie The Omen, which I think the remake was going to be called Omen 666, but now just called The Omen. And it was literally, it was like written up in the sky, which some people thought was, you know, quite apocalyptic. Every 70s horror movie that I enjoyed at the time, and a lot of them I didn't enjoy, all being remade. So Texas Chainsaw Massacre's been remade, Toolbox Murders, Hills Have Eyes, or was that 1980? But, you know, they are just basically, and at some point, they're going to get around to desecrating The Exorcist. I'm sure, I'm very worried about it already. But for now, we have a remake of The Omen, which was basically a sort of Exorcist cash-in done a few years later. The guy that wrote the script was called David Seltzer. It's called David Seltzer, and he said that he was enlisted to sort of do an exorcist-y story. It had to have devils, it had to have children, it had to have some horror, but, you know, could they sort of soft-pedal the obscenity? Thus, we got The Omen, which everyone who was a teenager when it came out remembers as being, ooh, it was a big deal because it was all based on Revelations. You know, no one had really read Revelations before The Omen came out. I mean, I know obviously religious scholars had, but people in the real world had not sat down and read, because it's all, you know, it's all in there. And the eight-headed monster with the three legs coming out of its eyes came out of the lake of fire, and the bloke with the sword came down and said, I can hear ding-dong bells and guys with lederhosen and steins of beer.
That's a rough
But it's obviously it's meant to be allegorical. It's not meant to be taken literally, as we keep getting told. So along comes The Omen, which has this veneer of, hey, based on a biblical truth, which is the Antichrist is going to be born, has in fact been born, here in the world to bring about the end of all, you know, society, destroy everything, lay low mankind.
Why have you gone into Peter Cook?
There's actually no way of doing it without going into Peter Cook, or that not the 9 o'clock news thing when they were trying to rehabilitate the Satanists. The story is American ambassador to Britain and his wife, played in the original by Lee Remick and Gregory Peck. So these are actors of stature, not to say age. So they're grown-up actors, proper, you know, actors, but grown-up actors, well, have a child, but their child dies in childbirth. At least they think that's what happens. And a mad priest says to them, sorry about that, but here's another child that looks very similar. Why don't you just take him? It'll all be fine. Cut to a few years in the future, in which they have grown, they're now living in England as the American ambassadors to England with this child called Damien. Now, of course, actually nowadays everyone knows Damien means as a result of the Omen movies. Of course, when the Omen came out, Damien was the name of the lead priest in The Exorcist, and that's where that's ripped off from. So it's always annoyed me that that's what Damien has now come to mean.
Sure, you'll get over it.
Growing up very, very nicely until Mad Priest, played in original by Patrick Troughton, who was one of the first Doctor Who's. I think he was the second Doctor Who, wasn't he? He took over after William Hartnell. Yep, William Hartnell first, then Patrick Troughton, an absolutely brilliant Doctor Who. Plays a Mad Priest, turns up to see the American ambassador to Britain saying, terrible things are afoot, your son is not what he seems. You remember the rhyme from The Eternal Sea, he rises, creating armies on either shore, turning man against his brother till man... Remember all this?
Fight? Nope.
Were you not a teenager in 1976? Did you just have a complete Omen bypass?
I think I saw the last one.
Well, Omen 3, which was the one that launched the career of Sam Neill. Because he was grown up. It wasn't scary at that point. You're older than me, though, aren't you?
Get on with it.
Fine, okay. So, if you know the original, which I do, and you obviously don't, you will recognise that most of that script is word for word from the original film. What they've done is taken the original David Seltzer script and remade it. In whole sections of the movie, they've remade it shot for shot in a way that reminded me of that terrible Gus Van Sant shot for shot remake of Psycho. So not only do you get the script that you can virtually sing along with, if you know the words as I do, but you also get all the set pieces are all the same. The falling off the balcony, the public suicide, the decapitations. When the first one one came out, the scene in which David Warner gets decapitated became one of the most famous movie scenes. And when they showed it on television, just when the advent of video recorders came out, everyone videoed it and then went to watch it back. How did they manage to do that? How did they get David Warner's head being cut off? Again, we get the decapitation here done slightly differently, this time with David Thewlis. But to no great effect. I mean, the strange thing is, what they've done is they've got Liev Schreiber and Julia Stiles, who are, with the best will in the world, not Gregory Peck and Lee Remick. For one thing, they're too young. Secondly, they don't have enough stature. And they've replaced the absolutely brilliant Billy Whitelaw, who was the scary nanny, with Mia Farrow. Now, Mia Farrow is a bit scary, but not in the way that Billy Whitelaw was.
Let's just get a Lederhosen update with Mark Pugach.
The men are slapping their thighs and the soles of their feet in a courtship dance, and then when they're responding by twirling their pink and black dirndls, there's a hayrick out there. It's southern Germany, it's Bavaria in all its glory, and the crowd are loving it and clapping and chanting in time to the music. It is a truly special view, Simon.
How many opening ceremonies have you witnessed, Mark?
Quite a few now. I've probably witnessed about four Olympic ones, summer and winter, and a couple of football ones and a couple of Commonwealth Games ones. And certainly the ones like the Olympics, they try to... sometimes they try to involve the rest of the world, but more often than not, and I don't blame them, they make it a very, very particular nationalistic thing. This is regionalistic. This is about Bavaria. This is not about Germany. This is about where we are at the moment. Stuff the rest of Germany. Oh, now the hayrick's on fire. And
deliberately?
Deliberately on fire, don't worry about it. And, of course, it's collapsed the sides to reveal underneath it a stage and a band. And I think this is... a Berlin band, Simon, called Seed, with three E's in it.
Of course.
Are you familiar with their work?
No, I don't think so.
Well, you will be by the end of this 4.5 weeks.
This sounds like the Royal Tournament. That's what this sounds like.
Can I just say, on the subject of Bavaria...
Is this going to be interesting?
Well, most of what I say isn't that interesting, but this is quite interesting. The very famous film director Werner Herzog, who, when I was with him in LA, got shot at on camera and said, "It is not a significant bullet." He is Bavarian, and when he was in Alaska, he was almost attacked by a grizzly bear, and he prevented the grizzly bear from attacking him by swearing at it in Bavarian. And he said that was very crucial, because the bear realised that you do not eat someone who swears at you in Bavarian.
That was quite interesting.
It sounds
as though one little bit has finished, Mark.
Yes, that little bit has finished, and Seed are now coming to the stage, resplendent in red. I have no idea what their music is like, but we will be able to give you an update very soon. Don't forget...
You said it wrong, it's Seed!
But I'll tell a story against myself. Don't forget that I once said to you at an event we were at, "Isn't this music Gary Newbon?" And you looked at me and you went, "Mark, you mean Gary Newman."
This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
John in Pontypridd was just making the point, Mark, that you've missed the whole point of X-Men 3. He says it's exactly what we wanted. Millions of fans agree. What do critics know anyway? An Iceman didn't do an ice slide, but I don't care. He was good fun. It sounds though the people who really love X-Men really love this movie.
No, they don't. And can I just say that there are very few things that I would take offence at, but being lumped in with Harry Knowles is one of them.
Just explain who he is.
Well, Harry Knowles is the guy who runs Ain't It Cool, this website, which some people consider to be, you know, some sort of great, you know, movie information. I have a differing opinion about that, and Harry Knowles' form of... Well, let's not even call it film criticism. Look, the fact is, Brett Ratner is a hack. He's the kind of guy that you do bring in at the last minute because you haven't got the person that you wanted to get. I don't think there was that much depth in the first place, frankly, but all the stuff that Bryan Singer put into the first movie is just not there in the third one. It plays to a much more, you know, mainstream, rounded, all the edges taken off, everything smooth, let's wrap it up nicely. And, you know, Ratner is the person that you get in when you want to remake Red Dragon with, you know, Sir Anthony Hopkins. Who can we get to do it? Because obviously no respectable filmmaker. Let's get Brett Ratner. However, that is clearly a matter of opinion, and that's something... But I take exception to being compared to Harry Knowles, and I'm sure that Harry Knowles would feel exactly the same way. At least, I hope he would.
Amongst the new releases, of which there don't seem to be any huge blockbusters, what do we have?
Well, the other big thing, I was finishing off and saying about The Omen, that I don't understand exactly what the point of it is. It seems to be fairly perfunctory. You remake the film, basically shot for shot, but you do it with some actors who aren't as famous as the original ones. You take out the people who are really, really, you know, Billy Whitelaw, who was so great in the original, you take her out, replace it with Mia Farrow, you redo the set pieces, but to no great effect. And so you sit there watching it going, well, it's not terrible. It's just not anything at all. It's just taken the wind out of what was always a bit of insubstantial popcorn fluff. Nobody should take the omen seriously. I was delighted to read in the paper that the church at which Patrick Troughton gets struck down in the most famous sequence have been complaining that the omen has done their reputation terrible things. Horror movies don't do churches bad, reputations bad things. I mean, horror movies make people go to church. That's how everyone understands that. Horror movies and church, hand in hand, they're all part of the same thing. It's all fine. It's all good. RV, Runaway Vacation, which is the other big release of the week, sadly. In America, RV means recreational vehicle. You know, it's a big truck that everyone gets into. Robin Williams' film, which always kind of makes my heart sink very slightly. Robin Williams is an executive family man. They're all going to go on holiday to Hawaii. Then he cancels the Hawaii holiday, and instead he decides that they're going to go to Columbia. I don't mean Columbia. I mean Colorado.
You mean where?
Colorado,
Columbia. It's easy to get confused.
In a big truck. So, the reason he actually wants to take him to Colorado is he has to get to an important business meeting that the family don't know about. They've all got to spend time together in a truck. En route, they will do lots of bickering. They will have fun with toilets. There will be no brakes. The tagline for the movie is one family, eight wheels, no brakes. So there's loads and loads of stuff in which the brakes don't work. They all spend time together during the course of it. They learn that there is more to family than just going to expensive holidays. Now, here's the worst thing about it. Jeff Daniels. Okay, Jeff Daniels in it is good. And I like Jeff Daniels. He's funny whenever he turns up, but he's only occasionally. In the way of those National Lampoon's European vacation movies, that every now and then there would be a funny bit, but it would be an interspersed funny bit. The worst thing about this is, it's directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, who made Men in Black. You remember that? Which is a great film. Yep. Then he made Wild Wild West. That thing, which was absolute rubbish. And this is closer to the Wickety Wild Wild than to Men in Black. But it's not even really terrible. I mean, in a way, I kind of went into it thinking, okay, great, you know, I know the reviews are all terrible. It went to number one in America. I'm really be... It's just dull. It's just not very... You can't even get angry about it. It's just incredibly dull and unremarkable.
I have a feeling Mark Pugach, there watching the opening ceremony in the Allianz Arena, has an opinion on RV.
Have you seen it?
No. I just, not on RV, but on Robin Williams. Do you not like him very much, Mark? I think at least he makes sometimes. I'm way out of my depth here, Simon. Way out of my depth.
Go ahead.
Different sorts of movies, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he makes rubbish and really rubbish movies, and then occasionally he makes terribly, terribly rubbish movies. And every now and then, Robin Williams accidentally stumbles into something brilliant. And an example of it would be The Fisher King, I mean, which he's really, really good, or 1 Hour Photo, which is actually not bad at all, in which he plays a psychopath. But when he does
Dead
cute,
Poets
charming,
Society, it's a great film.
Dead Poets Society is awful. I mean, that is a real crime against cinema, and the fact that you like that is unforgivable. Actually, I'm surprised that you and I are on speaking terms with you, and that your relationship with that movie, Captain, My Captain.
I thought it was
Crapton, my Crapton, as we all used Mark, to shout, you know.
I get the feeling, Mark, that you're a bit of a fan, but just don't want to face up to the good doctor on this.
Well, as I say, I choose my wickets carefully, and this is not a wicket on which I feel happy to take the fast bowling of Mark Kermode. I'm way out of my depth here. Can I tell you a subject to which I know a little bit more about, which is football, and Ballack is definitely not playing in this match. Oh, well, I'll bring it back down to what I know about.
He says he's better, though. He said
he
could play.
Better, but I tell you what, I've been given a team sheet here, and there's a big I against his name, and I stands for injured, so he's not playing.
Mark, thank you. Interesting point here from Tom in Yorkshire, just bearing in mind the Lonely Heart success that you had with the Ice Age 2 post-credits sequence. Tom says, can Dr. Kermode suggest a film to go to and a comment to make to find me a girlfriend? I'm looking for an intelligent, well-educated lady between 35 and 45. Looks not important. So what we want is, of the movies that are out this week, something to say, oh, good, more umpaw music. Do you know, by the end of this month, I'll have heard enough of this.
Yeah, really.
Hopefully, in Kaiserslautern.
By the end of this hour, I think I will have.
On Monday, we're doing the programme from Kaiserslautern for the Australia-Japan game, and I'm hoping that there aren't any umpaw bands.
Okay.
Anyway, so we want... something to say at the end of any of this week's releases, or even any of the other ones that are around, which Tom in Yorkshire could go to say loudly and just see what happens.
Okay, you go and see Pusher 3, The Angel of Death.
Oh.
Which, no, seriously, here's what you... Because he said...
He's not going to find a girlfriend at the end of
It's a, you know, it's of the releases out this week, it's a very, very... frankly, in comparison with some of them, it's really top of them. What you do is you go and see Pusher 3, and as the credits go down, rather than doing what everyone else say, which is, I'll bet there'll be Pusher 4, you say, it's interesting, isn't it, that Nick Winding Refn has really got most of his filmmaking talent from his father, Anders Refn, who edited Lars von Trier's Dogville.
That's not exactly a very neat thing to say at the end.
No, but I guarantee by the time you've got to the end of it, somebody will have said, yeah, absolutely, you're the man for me. Because if you manage to reference Anders Refn, who is a very, very good editor, then I think everyone will know that you're you know, you're on the money.
Okay, Pusher 3. Right?
Okay.
Well,
Pusher...
I personally, Tom, I doubt if you'll find anyone, but let's hear a bit.
But if you do, please let me know just to prove Simon wrong. Or, on the other hand, go and see Dead Poets Society and at the end of it stand up and say, well, that was a load of old pants and I can't believe that anybody took that film seriously. Pusher 3, Angel of Death, the two Pusher movies beforehand, all on a similar theme, which is this kind of disparity between gangsters and the mundanity of their lives. And they're all basically about gangsters in extremists going through really, really bad things. Nick Winding Refn's an interesting director. He made an English language movie called Fear X with John Turturro, which I really liked, although it's considered now to be something of a failure. But I thought it was a very interesting sort of Lynchian borderline horror movie. This, however, he's back on home territory again. We have a story of a drug linchpin, guy who's grown up, who's having a really terrible day. He's doing a number of things. One of them is he's going cold turkey and he's going to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. He's attempting to organise a party for his daughter's 21st birthday and he's doing a massive drug deal. You know that bit in Goodfellas when Ray Liotta has the day in which he's doing the cooking but he's also doing the drug deal at the same time and the police are... You remember this? Is one of the most famous sequences in modern cinema.
That's right.
Passing you by.
That's
well, it's,
right.
Although it sounds like it's like that, but obviously that's going by the by anyway, it's not much like that at all. It's got an 18 certificate, which is interesting, because for the first hour of the film, you think, well, I know this is going to turn very nasty, because it's got an 18 rating, but up until now, it plays very nicely on the humanity of this character. I mean, he's a total scumbag, but on the other hand, the stuff that he's enduring is very, very day-to-day. Then, in the end, it does turn nasty, but in a very mundane and downbeat kind of way. The best thing you can say is, I think he's a very good filmmaker. This is material that he knows very well. The three movies are all coming out together on DVD next week, so this is only a very brief theatrical release for Pusher 3. But he does have something. He has an eye, and I think at some point, Nick Winding Refn will make a big, successful movie that kind of breaks through in international territories. This isn't it, but I still think it's a, you know, it's a fine conclusion to the trilogy. I hope there isn't a fourth one.
So at the end of it, you have to stand up and make some kind of reference.
At the end of it, you have to say it's interesting. Nick Winding Refn obviously gets his filmmaking talent from his father, Anders Refn, who edited Dogville, which was a very hard thing to do because, as you know, Lars von Trier is very, very difficult to work with.
Alex in Birmingham, allegedly. I have to agree with the Doctor's review of X-Men 3, complete disaster
Thank
from start
you.
To finish and a total waste of the talent of the actors involved.
Exactly.
Brandner seemed to dump all the good parts of the first two and go for a whole bunch of explosions and it's all good, a new tune and introduced a bunch of new characters then don't bother to develop any of them. How is Brett Ratner allowed to get away with this? I announced loudly whilst leaving the cinema that it represented the death
of narrative cinema
to confuse looks all round. Anyway, we've got a couple of moments. Now we have a choice, okay? We either have more umpa music, which frankly I'd like to avoid, or we have some pithy reviews.
You'd like to umpa umpa stick it up your jumper.
What else do you have?
Election, which is Johnny 2 Hong Kong movie. Johnny 2 is a very big sort of a star, a filmmaking star. And it's a story about a battle for succession supremacy in the Wuxing society in Hong Kong. So it's kind of a gangster movie, but again, it's more to do with character than it is to do with gun battles and that sort of thing. This played in competition in Cannes last year, and I saw it in competition in Cannes last year, and I remember thinking at the time, it's fairly unmemorable. I mean, it looks quite nice, and some of the acting in it is fairly interesting, but it's not a memorable film. The sequel played in Cannes this year, and in order to see the sequel, I saw the original again, and was struck once again by how much it's not the Asian Godfather, which is what it says on the poster. There's a lovely quote on the poster from some completely disreputable source, which says, one of the best to come out of Hong Kong for some time. One of the best what to come out of Hong Kong for some time. That's the noun crucially missing from that sentence.
Mark, thank you very much indeed. Hope you enjoyed your first trip to the World Cup. That's it from us here. No more umpa music from us.
Germany 2006. No one gets you closer to the World Cup than Five Live. And if you want to get even closer, sign up for our new daily Five Live Wire. A roundup of the news and gossip from Germany, from our correspondents, the teams, the training camps, and the treatment rooms. Plus, you can tell us how, when, and where you'll be experiencing the World Cup and what you know about the teams that we don't. To get Five Live Wire delivered to your inbox before the first game each day, go online bbc.co.uk/5live.